It was early spring, and one of my colleagues and I were sitting outside in the little garden that we keep among the workers of our office. The first rays of sunshine were breaking through the branches of the trees, providing some much-needed energy for the plants that we had recently put in the soil. Sipping our cups of coffee, we started talking about the twists and turns of life that brought each of us to work on human rights. Inspired by the relaxed moment of chit-chat, I asked my colleague, who was older than me and had much more experience, how she felt about working in human rights as a woman. I had been struggling with feeling pushed aside sometimes in meetings, and I had begun to wonder if it was just me or if other women experienced the same thing. What she said surprised me, because the nature of working in human rights, there should be a working environment, she said, where my values, at least in principle, are totally aligned with those of the other people. If we want to work together effectively, that is, towards meaningful social change. But as soon as there are certain men in the room, especially older men, it just feels like my ideas don't count. No matter the setting, I always just feel a bit smaller, just a bit less hurt. She went on to tell me about how early on in her career, she always assumed that the feeling she got, that her ideas or comments were being dismissed somewhat or minimized, was due to her age and lack of experience. However, despite the growing years of experience, this feeling never quite went away. Apparently, I had hit a nerve with this question, and clearly I was not the only one having these feelings of invisibility. She explained that for her, the hardest part about being patronized or dismissed in a group setting that is supposedly safe is that it's masked in a caring tone, one of compassion, as though they think they are helping me and saving me from embarrassment. She paused here and thought for a moment. The saddest thing is that, as a young woman, it's hard to get a genuine opportunity to grow, because your ideas are not being challenged on their real merit, and your skills are not being developed, except in warfare and combat and survival, instead of in collaboration, listening, synergizing, and cross-fertilization. We finished our coffee in silence. So it was not just me, after all. The experience of my colleague is far from unique. It is symptomatic of a wider culture of patronization and discrimination. This podcast episode explores how these power dynamics play out in the food sovereignty and agroecology movement. Does the movement reproduce the very power relations they say that they are working to eradicate? This is the final episode of a mini podcast series called A Journey Through Feminist Agroecology. My name is Niki Brukova from CITSE, an international network of Catholic social justice organizations. This podcast series is a collaboration with the Agroecology Now group at the Center for Agroecology, Water and Resilience of the University of Coventry in the UK. You can find explanations of the terms we use here in the first two episodes. Over the past months, we have been on a journey through feminist agroecology. In our conversations with various feminist activists, we started uncovering what feminism has to do with the food we eat, and where indigenous feminisms and food sovereignty meet. In this episode, my colleague Carmen Contreras and I interview two inspiring guests, Leonida Odongo and Paula Gioia. Both Leonida and Paula are active in the peasants' movement at a local, national, European, and international level. While Leonida strongly brings in the gendered local African reality, Paula has actively been bringing to light issues related to the discrimination of LGBTIQ plus people in agriculture and food sovereignty movements. We were curious to hear from Leonida and Paula how they experienced patriarchal behavior inside the movement. But we also wanted to hear about which feminist practices they see in these movements. Our first guest is Paula Gioia. They are a peasant farmer and beekeeper based in Germany, working on a community farm. Paula is a non-binary gender person who identifies neither as a woman nor as a man. So throughout this podcast episode, we will therefore use the pronouns they, them when referring to Paula.
My name is Paula Gioia. I was born in the urban areas of Brazil and migrated later on in my 20s to Germany. Although I come from Brazil, it was in Germany where I discovered agriculture, more specifically the peasant agriculture, peasant farming.
Paula's initial encounter with feminism was within La Via Campesina, the international peasants' movement. This is where they came across feminist perspectives rooted in the experiences and concerns of peasants.
The women's spaces within La Via Campesina, they helped me see, the systemic dimension of patriarchy and its resulting oppressions. It helped me to understand that the injustices, the power imbalances, the violations I suffered in my life before, and that I also observed around me, they were not singular events, but much more they are part of a collective experience that we have as society. So this space helped me to understand that what happens in the private life has quite big political dimension and a collective dimension.
We asked Paula to tell us more about what they had observed in food sovereignty movements and spaces, and in which ways they have been impacted by patriarchal behaviors. We wanted to understand why this type of behavior is still so prevalent.
Patriarchal behaviors are part of our societies and also of our movements, because our movements belong to those societies. Mindsets are a result of a historical process of building them. And so we cannot just erase the historical process of building mindsets. So I think it is very important to be very conscious about where we come from as society, and then also as movements, and being aware about the reproduction of these behaviors. Because this consciousness is the first step to change them. So often I observe, for example, elder men being the ones who have publicly more visibility in our organizations. They are the ones often speaking. They are the ones representing the organizations, the movements in advocacy work.
It is common to reproduce patriarchal norms in our daily life and in our political acts. In the end, we are fruits of the society that we come from, says Paula, and we should not judge ourselves for that. But instead, we should be critical and self-critical and show willingness to change it.
When you are in a movement and you have been delegated to coordinate a process, to coordinate a certain instance of the movement, for me, this is also a position of power. And I think it's very important to be very conscious about that and to be respectful with the people who mandated you for this position, and to not fall into the trap of pushing for one's personal position alone, but like to be conscious who is the base you are representing or you are speaking for, and try to bring all this voice there.
Bringing all the voices to the table also means being aware of who is systematically silenced or sidelined and not tolerating those unjust power relations in movement spaces. We'll hear more from Paula in a bit, but first we will introduce our second guest. Her name is Leonida Odongo, and she is an activist and educator working on agroecology, feminism, human rights, and social justice.
I come from Kenya, in East Africa. I'm a Kenyan, and I'm the founder of an organization called Haki Nawiri Africa. Haki means justice in Kiswahili. Nawiri means to flourish. So I advance social justice in Kenya and also connect with other people in different parts of Africa, but also across the globe.
We asked Leonida what feminism means to her.
I describe the type of feminism that resonates with me as one that looks at the power struggles amongst the genders and the power structure. It's a feminism that is anchored on equity, recognition that we are different, recognition that we all have rights. It's a feminism that allows people to speak up their minds and their issues and to counter the systemic silencing of voices. Because, for example, if you talk about women, they're already disadvantaged. So continuing to silence them puts them at a greater disadvantage. So for me, feminism is where it allows people to speak out without being labeled as alien or as being too vocal or as behaving contrary to the cultural dictate.
Leonida grew up in a community called Luo in Kenya, where she experienced that there's a lot of preference and power given to men. In the African context, there are many challenges when talking about feminism. Overall, feminism, she explained, is not a term that resonates with people.
When you talk about feminism in the African context and people's reactions to this, is that they look at feminism as a Western concept, especially because feminism talks about power. Feminism talks about dismantling patriarchy. And so many people in Africa, particularly men, are not comfortable when they are challenged in terms of power because they always feel like they're being destabilized or they're being attacked. Others look at feminism as a shift from being an African into being Westernized and, you know, rejecting your culture, rejecting your being an African and espousing the West.
When Leonida is working in the international sphere, she often brings the African perspective to the conversation and amplifies the local realities of the communities that she works with.
We have our own strand of feminism as African people, given the distinct experiences that we've gone through as African people. For example, when you talk about the impact of colonialism, the impact of patriarchy on our lives, the control of resources by men, and the muted voices of women. Specifically, when I talk about Black feminism, it's related to the experiences of African people, which is distinct to our continent. For example, when you talk about African culture, it's very different compared to others. When you talk about, for example, principles such as Ubuntu, I am because you are and you are because I am, it may be something that's not happening in other continents. And we also have to be conscious of our realities and the privileges and how our privileges influence our thinking. And of course, how we're able to connect with others. Because when you talk about controlling resources in an African context for a woman, it's not the same about controlling resources for someone in the global north. It's important to include a diversity of voices in food sovereignty and agroecology movements. And examples of how this is being done is through including the voices of indigenous women. In many instances, indigenous knowledge is often demonized. And the notion that anything that comes from Africa is backward. This is still on the rise, but there is push to change this. And of course, we know that change takes time.
Questioning patriarchy in global spaces is challenging, says Leonida. Patriarchy disrupts women's lives and deprives them of opportunities. When she talks about patriarchy in global spaces, people often don't understand how this links to food in the African context. This was very clear for her while engaging in the negotiations of the Committee on World Food Security. This is an international and intergovernmental platform where different stakeholders work together to ensure food security and nutrition.
When I was pointing out the aspects of patriarchy, and when there was a paragraph that was discussing women challenges facing women, and then I was pointing out that in Africa, patriarchy is our lived reality. These are the challenges that patriarchy brings to us when we talk about matters food. I could see like people were not getting it, were not seeing it as a challenge, understanding my reality. The higher in the policy spaces you find there are less women, predominantly these spaces are occupied by men. And this means that you feel intimidated, for example, in such space, because as a woman, you'd feel more comfortable when you're in a space that has more women, so that when you say something, these other women are going to back you up and say, yes, that is what is happening. But when you find yourself in a male-dominated space, you find that it's a bit of a challenge, especially when you're bringing your on-the-ground issues to a, you can call it an alien space or a foreign space that is different from your reality.
So we wondered which key feminist values should be brought into the movement.
One is, of course, the centrality of the aspect of power. That is very, very important, because when you look at feminism, it's all about power struggles and the imbalance of power that exists between the genders. So creating an opportunity, an enabling environment that people can thrive, that people don't have to struggle, that people don't have to feel mistrust or insecure because of presence of one gender. I think that will be an ideal situation. So I'm looking at a value of transformation and deliberate transformation. And this is not only transforming the structures, transforming the power structures, transforming the systems. And lastly, I'd look at care, you know, being able to care for yourself, care for others, but also recognition, for example, that sometimes we need a space to sit back and relax, because you find that, for example, women do a lot of work. They take care of others. They don't take care of themselves. So a feminist system that cares for each other, that gives you space to sit back and relax. And of course, pay attention to your well-being. And last but not least, I'm also looking at participation. Not tokenism, but meaningful participation.
For Leonida, breaking down and transforming patriarchal power structures and care are key feminist values that should be brought into food sovereignty and agroecology movements. For Paola, a feminist food movement also needs to be open to self-reflect, to be self-critical, and to have the willingness to improve. For all of this, solidarity is essential, and it's important to understand that.
I believe that a feminist agroecology food movement must be able to embrace all people in all their diversities with respect and equally, and also understand that all these diversities, they are beautiful and they are welcome and they enrich the movement. They make us stronger. So with other words, I would say that feminist agroecological movement is clearly a leftist movement, which embraces migrants, racialized people, people with diverse abilities, gender queer people. And this movement makes a clear stand against right-wing forces. The movement gives, in that sense, voice to voice and to lives that are regularly undermined in our societies. And this movement must also have intergenerational thinking, understanding the importance of learning from our past generations, acting in the present, but always in respect with the generations to come, as well as with other beings of our planet, and also in respect with our entire cosmos. And for this, I think intergenerational spaces of exchange, of learning, of capacity building, they are essential. And finally, I would say that this movement brings a critical systemic perspective and strives to build lived experiences to stand against the agri-industrial model that has been disseminated since the Green Revolution worldwide, and which has been contributing to the multiple crises that our societies are facing today.
Some of these values already resonate in the movement. Paola, for example, sees a positive evolution in the sense that a feminist approach is brought more and more into movements around agroecology and food sovereignty.
Despite the resistance that I still see happening within the movement when it comes, for example, to opening up the discussions around genderqueer people, speaking about non-cis heteronormativity, although there is some resistance, I see also openness to that. So maybe the steps are not as quick as we would like to, but there are steps. There is improvement happening. There are spaces being created. And there is also beautiful resonance and beautiful results when I see many new, beautiful people shining because now they feel like part of the movement because there is a space for their lives, there's a space for their stories, there's a space for them to be recognized, acknowledged, and also to play a role in the movement.
Paola also emphasized the importance of connecting our struggles. As alone, we are not going to achieve much, and of building alliances across different sectors. This requires constant work, of course. They give the example of the civil society and indigenous peoples mechanism for the relations with the UN Committee on World Food Security.
It's a space to develop policies related to food security within the United Nations. The most progressive space actually in the United Nations system, in which also the actors who are in the center of the food system have a say. We don't have a vote, but we have a say. And the CSIPM, so the Civil Society and Indigenous Peoples Mechanism, is a self-organized space or platform which organizes the different voices, the different perspectives, being in terms of constituencies. So here I mean with constituencies, I mean, for example, of course, the food producers, farmers, smallholder farmers, fishers, small fishers, indigenous peoples, pastoralists, but also urban food insecure communities, also consumers, also NGOs. There are different constituencies, as we call them, also the women, the youth, but also from a regional perspective. And this mechanism, the CSIPM, organizes these different voices so we can speak with a common voice in front of the member states. And this has a lot of strength because we are not speaking with different positions. We have sometimes really tough discussions among ourselves before we speak outside publicly, let's say. But this is strong because, I mean, this mechanism is actually an open mechanism where any organized movements or organizations can participate. And it's a direct interface with member states. And the outcomes will be also important.
Leonida also sees some of these feminist values and principles already being translated in the movement around food sovereignty and agroecology in which she is engaged, like empathy, inclusivity, and lastly, also a lot of care, in particular self-care. For her, building a feminist movement from the inside, based on these values, would include the following steps.
One is to mobilize, organizing, educating, and of course, raising consciousness for liberation. A shift from women being oppressed to women being liberated. Consciousness about what people eat and where that food comes from. Making communities recognize that their voice matters. Nurturing existing movements, strengthening those ones that are existing. Formation of movements where there are none. Bringing out the essence of building collectives.
In the process of building a feminist food sovereignty and agroecology movement, it's important to create spaces for exchange and for generating a kind of self-empowerment among equals. In particular, for groups who have been historically marginalized in our societies, but also in our organizations and movements.
I think non-mixed spaces are important. We have a space among equals, people who share similar experiences of discrimination, violations, marginalizations, and so on. And I think it's important to generate a kind of self-empowerment of the group in a space which feels at least a bit more safe than in others. I am not sure there are safe space at all. I mean, completely safe space, but it's at least a bit more safe. And where people can realize that they are not alone. And this can empower. But I also think that it's important that these spaces are not isolated space. These spaces have to generate, have to come up with strategies to interact with the rest of the movement, to share their analysis, to bring up their political demands in the overall demands or analysis of the movement. I think they are important as space, definitely, but also they have to do a step outside.
The experiences of Leonida and Paula show that movements on food sovereignty and agroecology are not by themselves feminist. However, agroecology and food sovereignty stand for a shift in power relations and for fighting racism, sexism, and all forms of oppression. Therefore, these movements should really focus on social justice and try to keep feminist values central. If there are inequalities, then you're not achieving food sovereignty nor agroecology. But systematically integrating feminism into these movements is difficult, as we live in a heteropatriarchal society. It's a continuous process that, as Paula highlights, starts by being conscious of where we come from, the societies in which we are embedded, and being aware about the reproduction of patriarchal and male chauvinist behaviors. It entails rethinking many privileges. A conscious attempt is needed to counter the systemic silencing of voices that Leonida spoke about, and to uplift a wide diversity of voices, especially of the most marginalized. An intersectional approach is often still absent in movements, and this means that we risk fighting against one thing while not seeing other injustices. So there's a need to address the question of power, also in agricultural spaces, where many men have the power of age, hierarchy, and knowledge. Within the agroecological movement, we want to change the system, but it's equally important to transform our ways of working from within, so that we can focus our attention on collaboration, listening, synergizing, and cross-fertilization, rather than on survival and defending ideas. Because not doing this leads to inconsistency. The conversation that I had with my colleague in the garden and the experiences shared by Leonida and Paula remind us that this is a long struggle and that we must come together in our workplaces, in our communities, and in other spaces to really support each other and learn from each other instead of keeping silent about it. This was the final podcast of our mini-series, A Journey Through Feminist Agroecology, a collaboration between CITSE, the International Network of Catholic Social Justice Organizations, and Agroecology Now at the Center for Agroecology, Water and Resilience at the University of Coventry in the UK. We are glad that you joined us on our journey through feminist agroecology, and we hope that it inspired you to continue exploring and supporting a feminist agroecological transition. You can find more information, including references, where you can dive deeper into these topics on our websites, agroecologynow.com and citsa.org. You can find all episodes on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.